What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You've got me and Tom. I said me and Tom this time. You got me and Tom and Lotus and Lotus. We got there's four of us. Welcome to the show. Man, I guess we're delving deeper into the iceberg, and maybe it's starting to, I don't know, mess with my brain. Or more likely, I was busy doing other stuff and now I'm changing focus and, you know, shifting.
You just kind of alluded to the fact that there's, you know, a podcast iceberg. Are there really four of us this whole time?
This is going to be on the iceberg. Like 14 episodes from now, we'll get to that layer and we'll be like, wait, Tom and Lotus,
there's duplicates?
What? That's on the iceberg now somehow? Mm-hmm. Icebergs are weird. You never know. But Lotus, are you ready? We're digging into some more cool iceberg stuff, iceberg lore.
Yeah, let's do it. I was going to say, I don't know if we're getting weirder, but we're getting to a couple more that I personally am a big fan of, so to speak.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff coming up. Well, let's get right into it. We are kicking off. We're starting off this week with episode item. I told you.
This is already off to a great start.
Already a great start.
Crushing it.
Yep. So good. 27. We're starting with 27. This one is Heartstones, not Hearthstone, like the card game from Blizzard. Heartstones, strange minerals believed to be originated from the Red Mountain that can give life to people and magic constructs. And this, interestingly enough, these are objects that you're more likely to find in Skyrim than you were in Morrowind. Is this like, does that resonate with you, Lotus?
Yeah, as far as I remember, that would be correct.
They appear specifically in Solstheim in the Fourth Era, which
correct.
Is like a significant period of time after Red Mountain exploded and all of that stuff happened.
Right. And it's you'll get them a lot of times during the events of the Dragonborn DLC, which is obviously where you go to Solstheim in Skyrim. And the thing is, it's when you're fighting those ash creations, they will drop them. So it's right. Like outside of that, I actually... When reading this one, it's just like, oh, yeah, I kind of just, yeah, those were a thing.
Didn't think much about it, right?
No, it was just kind of like, yep, that's where they originated as far as I remembered off the top of my head.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we've got the UESP page here, which we love the UESP, and they have a synopsis, and it's a very fairly brief one. A heartstone, or heartstone, all one word or combined together, you can find it in different ways, is an unusual type of ore mined from deposits which appeared in Solstheim in the Fourth Era. Though deposits of them have been known to exist in the Brothers of Strife ruins in Stonefalls, circa Second Age 582, so the events of Elder Scrolls Online, which would have been way earlier, it is suspected that the deposits on Solstheim surfaced or landed on the surface during the cataclysms of the Red Year. Master Naloth of the House Telvanni suspected that the material came from Red Mountain and was flung along with other materials to Solstheim during its eruption and may continue to land on Solstheim from smaller eruptions. So these are still coming out of the ground and showing back up.
Right.
Even two centuries later, they still smolder with the heat of the mountain, as the molten rocks had laid next to the heart of Lorcan for millennia. Some vestige of its power has seeped into them. Heartstones sometimes raise ash spawn from the bits of bone buried in the nearby ash. Through trial and error, Neloth's apprentice, Talvis Fathrion, something like that.
Yeah, I always Fathrion, but Fathrion, that's whatever.
It's a Y and an O next to each other. It's very rare, right?
Whatever.
Learned that a stone was needed to prevent an Ash Guardian summoned through conjuration from attacking the caster. The stones also can be used for enchanting purposes. And then it goes on a little bit more about just the use of these things. But really, what's most interesting about this is that it seems as if something happened with the heart of Lorcan and the magma being in close proximity to each other and then getting dispersed across the continent, or at least some of these very specific locations. And they can bring Ash Guardians to life and do all sorts of other weird stuff.
Right, which is the, again, that's where you I assume that's where most people would know them from, is just like, oh, it's a new type of enemy that you're fighting in the Elder Scrolls Skyrim's expansion called Dragonborn. That's just like, okay, that's these enemies, and they dropped these things.
Right. But it does add a little bit more mystery, credence to the power of Lorcan's heart, all of that
Correct.
stuff.
That's the part that I find very interesting about it, because of the fact that it's not just a random ore or a random thing that kind of exists and it's just for these enemies, but it's like, if this is the basis to it, that's exactly it. It lends credence to the fact that it maybe isn't just a catchy song about it being there and being metaphorical. It might actually be there.
Yes. Also, it's interesting how long these maintain their heat and their power. There's
Yes.
something mysterious going on with that as well. It also makes me wonder, years later, if you were to delve back down into Red Mountain, what else are you going to find down there?
Right. Well, especially when you're thinking about delving in into later eras,
Yeah, we're talking
regardless.
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later.
Correct. And it's like you have the events of Morrowind itself with, your big fight against Dagoth, or in the heart chamber type of thing. It makes it interesting. It's like, as a result, did you kind of facilitate some of this, or was this just like a thing that was happening? And then it gets a little, I don't know, dicey when you have some of the lore that comes from the Elder Scrolls Online, and it's seen before the events of Morrowind as well. So it's definitely there, and then its prominence seems to change over time. And
Right.
again, it's also, you're not in the area like during Oblivion. You don't go there. So it's like, okay, well, if you're never in that area, why would you see it on like mainland Cyrodiil, like type of deal? You probably wouldn't run across it necessarily, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't there, more so that you weren't there to confirm or deny it was there.
Right. Also, it's interesting because, like you were saying, the events of Oblivion, or I'm sorry, of Morrowind happen after Elder Scrolls Online, and you can find these at different places in the second era in Elder Scrolls Online, which implies that it
Right.
wasn't the events that happened in Morrowind with the Nerevarine that have anything to do with these, other than maybe just, the mountain getting upset and spewing more of
Sure,
them
sure,
out.
sure. And firing the stuff off, right.
Right. But so that means that these were there before that, which would have been when, I don't know, the Nerevar was there and the tribunal and all of that. Maybe this connects
Sure.
back to that. But seemingly these are connected to Lorcan's heart itself. So the origin of these Heartstones may go all the way back to the Morrithic era, to the very, very earliest parts of recorded history.
Right.
And they just have been like under the ground for all this time, and then they just come up with the magma
Sure.
or
And
whatever.
if they are actually tied into the literal heart of Lorcan, I mean, that makes sense because his heart would have been sitting there for quite some time already, if that were the case.
Yeah.
So it's not like that wouldn't align, but it just kind of it makes sense if that actually is what it is really existing of. Okay, yeah, no, it I mean it's been there, but at that point, it's even longer that it would be maintaining this like heat that you can still feel in like modern day. It's kind of wild that it's just like, okay, this is just like, so it's like a mini furnace. It's just generating heat after this point, because how, otherwise how hot could this have possibly been, that just this point millennia have gone by and they're still warm.
Right. Yeah, sorry, my dog was barking up. But yeah, it seems like the power that just keeps on giving. Good old Lorcan's heart. You never can get enough. But that's Hearthstones. We don't know much else other than the fact that you can come across these in a few different locations, like we explained. But it would be kind of a fun thing to bring back in future games, because who knows how far the mountain can spew these things, and or how long ago they did get deposited other places and might be discovered underground again. But here, let's move on to 28, the next one, the White Gold Concordat, a peace treaty. Man, words are hard, extra hard
Words
today for
are
some reason.
extra hard this evening.
Yeah, a peace treaty between the Mede Empire and Aldmeri Dominion that ended the Great War. Its terms were heavily in favor of the Aldmeri Dominion. This is not new news. Like, if you've played Skyrim, you
No,
know
this
about this.
literally leads to the events of Skyrim. Like,
Right.
this is the precursor, the lore or the story that is told in between games. That is what this is, essentially. It's just, Oblivion ended, all these things happened, a bunch of time goes by. Oh, by the way, here's Skyrim, the newest game, and this happened in between.
Right.
And that's really just what this is.
Right. And the whole plot line with the banishing of Talos worship and the Aldmeri Dominion expanding their power. I mean, the reason why you see Thalmor walking around in Skyrim has to do with this.
It is a thing you interact with in game. It is like, it is actually one of the major cruxes of Skyrim. Like, it's the basis for some of the conflict you encounter.
Right. And because of this, the Empire lost a lot of power. They conceded a lot of power to the Aldmeri Dominion. And there's rumors about the next Elder Scrolls game. If this ends up in Hammerfell, then there are echoes of what's going on here that are going to affect those events as well, as long as they continue along with
unless we do another major time jump type of thing, we will most likely still be dealing with the effects of the White Gold Concordat.
And even if we do another major time, let's say we jump another 100, 200 years, the remnants of this, and maybe the things that kind of happened because of that will then inform the plot of the next game. So this is a cornerstone of the most recent lore in the Elder Scrolls universe. And it's very important. We talk about this a lot in previous episodes, so we don't need to go into all the nitty-gritty details on this one because it is a piece of so much of the lore. But here, let's move on to the next one. Number 29, Oblivion Crisis was an inside job. Might be related to the theory about how Yegar Tharn and his Tharnatos were paving the way to Mehrunes Dagon's invasion of Tamriel. This has a number of different steps to it. And I'm going to take you through my research and what I came up with here. So first of all, we have to go back in time to Yegar Tharn, right? The strongest piece of evidence here is Yegar Tharn's confirmed association with Mehrunes Dagon. In the Elder Scrolls Legends Battle Spire, we're going back in time, is explicitly stated that Yegar Tharn struck a deal with the Daedric Prince of Destruction. Tharn used Dagon's forces to seize the Battle Spire, which was the Imperial training facility for the Battle Mages. If you go back and play that game, you'll get all this stuff. To eliminate the only force capable of identifying his magical disguise while he impersonated Imperial Uriel Septim the Seventh. This proves that my dog cannot stop barking, and that also...
They have a lot to say about this theory.
He just loves Yegar Tharn. This proves that the highest level of the Imperial Administration was already in league with Dagon 30 years before the Oblivion Crisis began. And that's also kind of interesting, being that the events of Battlespire were only 30 years before the events of the game
Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Because at first, there weren't these mega time jumps in the series, and then it just all of a sudden was like, ah, just kidding, we're all over the map now covering time frames. So it definitely started much more condensed, and it's like, wow, there's a lot happening all at once. And then it was just like, nah, just kidding, we're jumping hundreds of years.
Right. So the second point here, the term Tharnatos is community play on Thanatos, right? So Thanos, Thanatos, all of these words come from the original Greek meaning basically death or personification of death. And
I had never heard this, by the way, until we got to this iceberg thing prior to the show when you sent me the section that we were getting to to cover for this episode. I was like, I've literally never heard this.
It's kind of a community thing. There's not a whole lot of evidence for this, but I can see why people would like draw this connection.
It's clever,
right? So the Tharnatos would be the Greek variation of it in our own world. And oftentimes, as you and I have talked, there's so many real world inspirations for like the reason why things are named a certain way or a certain god or a certain whatever. But the theory posits that Yegar Tharn didn't just want to rule. He wanted to dismantle the Septim lineage and the metaphysical barriers protecting Nirn, which makes sense if he was in league with Dagon. During the 10 years of the Imperial Simulacrum, other words are hard, the Third Era 389 to 399, Tharn did a few different things. He purged the Elder Council, he replaced or intimidated key officials, creating a vacuum of competent leadership. So cut out other people who could have done a good job or stood in his way. He investigated civil wars. He sparked conflicts with the Five-Year War and the Arnesian War, bleeding the provinces of their military strength. So then he basically took all the forces and sent them off on these other conquests in order to mm-hmm. just use them up, basically.
Right. It's like, we got to get you out of the way so that you don't realize what I'm doing. Kind of just look this way. Don't pay attention to any of this.
Right. And on top of it, and Lotus, this goes back to that episode you and I did where I was speculating about how the Dragonfires seem very odd. Dragonfires, sure do. If you aren't familiar with this, have to do with the Amulet of Kings and a dragon born emperor being on the throne, and all of that stuff comes together, and it means that the fires stay lit, which means that Akatosh is protecting Tamriel from Daedric invasions. It's all kind of like this, then therefore this, right?
Yeah, essentially a sacred barrier as long as these fires are going is the idea.
Right, but the history and the consistency of this is inconsistent because there hasn't always been a dragonborn emperor on the throne, and things have happened to the Amulet of Kings before and then been returned, and yet oftentimes during those times, the Dragonfires either were lit or weren't, but we didn't get a Daedric invasion. Like, it's not necessarily consistent. So,
right. It also, I was going to say, it's kind of hard to believe with, you know, Daedric beings knowing all that they do, which is, you know, alluded to in the series all the time. Just anytime the Dragonfires theoretically aren't lit, oh man, it's convenient nobody tried to invade at this time. It's
right. Like, they don't just all start rushing in. Yeah.
Right. That's just it. It feels like, if anything, the only reason that we wouldn't get invaded in Tamriel at that point would simply be because everybody's trying to jam through the door at the same time. Because
too many people getting on the bus. But the Dragonfires, regardless of the inconsistencies, still are important for keeping the barrier up. And as Yeager Tharn was an imposter emperor disguised as the real emperor, he could not technically light the Dragonfires or wear the Amulet of Kings to maintain the barrier because he didn't fit the mold. He wasn't the right kind of guy to be able to do that. So maybe there's something going on here with the thinning of the barrier. Maybe the barrier didn't come down immediately, but the fact that somebody was not exactly on the throne correctly over time that deteriorates the barrier. I don't know. A lot of this stuff is fuzzy, but the fact that he was the wrong guy on the throne with the way that's supposed to work is a problem, period.
Right.
So number three, the Mythic Dawn gets involved, right? So we have this inside job aspect. It's reinforced by how deeply the Mythic Dawn cult has penetrated the Imperial infrastructure by the time of the Oblivion Crisis. So Chancellor Akado's inner circle is one part of this. Several members of the Imperial bureaucracy and the City Watch were revealed to be sleepers for the Mythic Dawn. How many times have you played through Oblivion and like killed somebody and all of a sudden like you found out they were a secret Mythic Dawn agent?
Yes, I actually, that's one of the things that I actually really love is when you, I mean, not that I just random and indiscriminately murder people in the Elder Scrolls game. I wouldn't do such a thing. I'm a hero, of course. But so when I'm randomly murdering people in the Elder Scrolls game.
When it inevitably happens.
I love having surprise messages come up because of something else. It's a little less fun when they're just like, oh, you can't kill this person because they're story critical. I'm like, oh. Whereas like, they're a Mythic Dawn agent. That's okay. I always found that funny because when it was somebody you didn't expect in Oblivion, the ones, same theory as in Morrowind, where it would give a little message at the bottom of the screen. Broken the prophecy. You've plunged the world into eternal darkness, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
I love the surprise of like, oh, that person was Mythic Dawn? Like, what? They seem so nondescript.
Right. And it's true. Oh, they're just kind of a regular dude, right? And nope. But, yeah.
The thing that I loved about that is it felt so real because it's like, dude, you've always got your stereotypical cultists, but it's the ones that aren't stereotypical and the general masses that can be sucked into cults that it's like, those are the ones that are so unsettling. And they have that as such a cool feature when it's like a Mythic Dawn person or it's like, mm-hmm. oh, I had no idea mm-hmm. this random NPC was actually like a shopkeeper. Like what?
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And more importantly, the aristocracy, which would have been tied to Tharn. And then on top of it, not only that, but we have these secret, you know, bureaucratic members who are members of the Mythic Dawn. But also, did it occur to you that the assassins knew exactly the secret escape routes of the Imperial Palace at the very beginning of the game when you're trying to get the Emperor out and save his life?
Yeah, and it's not like one or two people stumbled into it. Like, that was a full-scale ambush for 10 minutes.
Yeah, Yeah. So number four, the Mankar-Camran connection here. Mankar-Camran, the leader of the Mythic Dawn, claims in his commentaries on the Mysterium Xarxes that Tamriel is actually a plane of Oblivion, Lorkhan's plane, and that Dagon is basically liberating it. He's not invading. He's not here to invade. He's not attacking us. He's freeing us.
Yes.
Right? So let me continue this real quick, and then ahead. I'll let you chime in. If Yegar Tharn shared this philosophy, we don't know for sure, but if he did, his goal wasn't just a coup, but a metaphysical reset. By killing Uriel Septim the Seventh's heirs and eventually the Emperor himself, the inside agents, so the people we just talked about, effectively turned off the world security system for the Master Control Room, which we all know. But the reason for doing that would have been not for control and power, although that obviously was part of it, but a metaphysical reset. Like, this was a philosophical or theological disagreement about what Tamriel even is.
Right.
Now, the final piece of this, oftentimes people who talk about the lore point to Tharn's family and the history of evidence as being not just with Yegar Tharn, but it's a kind of a multi-generational thing, right? In Elder Scrolls Online, we have Abner Tharn of the same lineage, same bloodline.
Yep.
This is in the Second Age. He had something to do with the Soul Burst, in which Moleg Bal attempted the plane meld to pull Tamriel into his plane of existence and all of that. He also was not always the nicest dude and definitely was sketchy through parts of that storyline, right? Now, he redeems himself in the story of Elder Scrolls Online, but we do get to meet other members of the Tharn family who all seem pretty sketchy. So this points back to this being a pattern. Maybe this was something that the Tharn clan had been considering, or I don't know, a theology or philosophical view of the world that had kind of festered for a very long period of time and finally was able to take root with Mankar-Camran in order to try to actually make it happen.
Right. And to your point of the lineage, it's like, it seems like it's sort of almost an inherent family trait because, you know, other than, what is it?
Abner
Tharn.
Yeah. His sister. I forget her name.
I was about to say Clivio, who
hijacks
an Elder Scroll after trying to, like, when you get to the Imperial City, it's like they all have this thing where they're kind of like, hey, here's my chance to kind of jump on this opportunity to get a little power myself. And, you know, what are you going to do? I can probably, it's always got the air of I'm smarter than the Daedric Prince I'm dealing with.
Right. Yeah. I can fool the Emperor, so I could definitely fool a Daedric Prince.
Bingo. Yeah. And it doesn't work like that. And to the previous note of kind of just like, you have these things where it's like, oh, well, you know, they're phrasing it in a way that it's kind of like, oh, well, it's not an invasion. We're liberating you. It's euphemisms galore here on how they can phrase this in a positive way. But it's something that, I you have other beings in the series doing the exact same thing. We can pull another thing from Battlespire because it's one of my favorite quotes from Battlespire when the ideal masters are trying to get basically you to just get rid of yourself so that you don't inconvenience them anymore.
Right.
And they're like, oh, no, you can totally join us. We'll free you of your mortal coil by just letting you bathe in the mana beams. And I'm like, you're going to laser blast me is what you're saying.
You're removing my physical body. That's
right.
Not
it's
freedom.
Like, I think I would like my skin, but thanks for the offer. So it's like, it's trying to convince people to basically acquiesce without a fight and not realize until it's too late what you're doing.
Right. So maybe it was an inside job. I mean, it seems like there is at least evidence for some people.
I actually kind of like this theory because I do think that at least it has some credence. Even if it's not 100%, it definitely tracks. Even inside job or not, what the reasoning is can be speculated. I feel more than the fact that it probably was somewhat influenced, just because even if it was just, well, I don't really personally care about an invasion as much as, hey, I can utilize this to my advantage type of thing.
Right. I think that the inside job part is fairly accurate. I think
Agreed.
The speculation, if we take this so far back and say that maybe this was something that was on the agenda for hundreds of years in the making, I think that more likely the Tharns are just power hungry and they've all been doing what they can do over time.
Yeah, just it. I think we kind of are on the same page with that one. It's just like the invasion thing, yes, but it's more of a side effect of what they're trying to do for themselves.
Right. But then by the time you get to Mankar Cameron, I think there is a lot of other people who were involved who were being quiet and secretive about it.
Correct.
Didn't come to and light. Yeah.
Given enough time, a lot of megalomaniacs will start buying into their own hype too.
Right. And it's weird. Like power hungry narcissists seem to draw other power hungry narcissists to them.
Also,
you know, like
also valid.
But hey, let's move on. Number 30. This is another secret one here. The Nervarine was an Imperial agent. Now, the basis for this is the Nervarine is recruited into the Blades after being released from prison, eventually becoming the ranking Blades member in Vardenfell after Cassius' departure to the Imperial City. Now, this is a reference to the events of Elder Scrolls Morrowind. And the thing I find most interesting about this isn't the fact that you can become one of the Blades and that these are options and you can become the leader of the group, which happens in so many Elder Scrolls games. It's just part of the formula.
That's not uncommon.
Right. That's not the telling point here. To me, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you know Morrowind better than I do, Lotus.
Sure.
But this is basically the first thing you are given to do after you get off the boat.
Correct.
Is go talk to Caius.
Yes.
Did I call him Cassius earlier? Caius.
Yeah.
And why would you be sent to go talk to him after the boat and be given that quest line unless there's some greater reason other than just like, hey, maybe this guy can tell you where to go.
Correct. I was going to say, you show up to this shirtless studs place.
right a creepo shirtless studs place.
Creepo Grande. The dude's got all the Skooma paraphernalia Creepo everywhere.
Creepo Grande is going to be the next character I make in any of these games. Maybe I should stream some Elder Scrolls tomorrow.
Make a character Creepo Grande.
Creepo Grande. If you're listening, if you're in the chat right now, or if you join me for this, if I do this tomorrow, who knows? Maybe I can have carve out some time.
You gotta give him one of those Friar Tuck haircuts.
Yeah, he definitely has to have a Friar Tuck haircut. And also, chat, I definitely need some inspiration for what my goal is for Creepo Grande's playthrough. But go on, Lotus.
But yeah, so like that is to your point, like. Yes, you basically trip over quests as soon as you enter, you know, Sidonine from you get off the boat dock and, you know, you check in type of thing. But that's just it. That's really your only objective, period, right out the gate. And then other objectives kind of come across your plate as you go, like they always do. But if this is totally, you know, without any merit, it's a little weird. Why is he your focus point?
And you can add other stuff. Why that dock? Why that location? Why that day? You know,
correct.
Like it all seems to add up. And again, I mean, it's a video game, right? So like they had to pick a location. They had to have you come off the boat somewhere. But it all lines up to whoever sent you on that boat very specifically wanted you to meet him.
Well, exactly. And the other thing is, a lot of times you'll get these situations that, okay, there is an assault in Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion that causes, you know, a prison break. Well, it becomes a prison break, but at first the Emperor is trying to escape and they stumble across you. Okay, this is like an emergency event happening.
Right. And he had a vision. Like that was something that he saw in his fate. He saw that he was going to meet you. And then
in Skyrim, you've got the situation of you get caught crossing the border and, you know, whatever. There is no real goal for anybody like, hey, we're going to put this guy in a certain way. No, they're aiming to bring you to the executioner's block. You're supposed to end there. And then unrelated, Alduin shows up and starts nuking the place. So like you end up breaking free as a result. The start of Morrowind, it's just like you wake up. Hey, here's a dock. No event changed what happened here. We brought you here.
Right. You were already set free and nobody seems to know why.
Correct. Like, and that's just it. It seems more orchestrated than the other openings of games.
Right. Yeah.
So,
Those other ones, you're right. Those other ones sound like fate. This sounds
yes.
like somebody had an agenda. They picked you from their pool of prisoners and were like, okay, you're the one we're going to send over there.
Correct.
And that's where we pick up the game, and we aren't given that information.
Right.
All we know, though, is that we have to go talk to Caius, which is like your
Exactly.
first quest.
Yes, it's literally your first little journal entry, I think, other than actually, I think your first one is technically like talk to the
Yeah, get off the boat and talk to the guy getting off the
get up,
boat.
yeah,
Yeah.
the like ordnance officer or whatever he's called
Right,
specifically. But
right.
like, yeah, but yes, your first like notable quest objective is just like, all right, head to Belmora, go find him. It's like, oh, all right, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah, what's your name, prisoner? Or whatever he says when you
Right.
get off the boat. Yeah. All right. So I think there's some credence to this one. This could be the case. There's not hard evidence, but it is circumstantial, and it is a little bit odd, especially with the way this plays out at the beginning compared to the other game.
Right, for sure.
So there you go. That's number 30. Number 31. This one is simply Maik the liar, the character, the Khajiit, right?
His existence.
Yeah, the description in the iceberg is, and just so you guys know, the descriptions are already there. These were things that people already wrote when whoever put together the iceberg, and this was one of the really big ones. So a joke character that appears in several games. Developers often break the fourth wall through him to tell jokes and make excuses about development decisions and or fan complaints. He is a notable source of numerous humorous fan theories. And has also been mentioned in out-of-game MK Michael Kirkbride lore is what that stands for.
Right.
We didn't need to do much research on this one
N
because Lotus and
no,
I
and
bring up Mike all the time.
we've also gone over various things on Maik. I know in a couple of the Patreon chats, we've devolved into discussions on Maik, and it's just like Maik is a very creative. I mean, it's mentioned fourth wall breaking, but it's a very creative way of just having like this tie in that really you can't do outside like the video game medium, honestly. Like it's almost unique to this medium to be able to have a character like Maik
Can you
exist.
imagine? Okay, so here's a parallel. Imagine watching something like The Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, and there's a Maik character that just shows up on camera every so often. Not necessarily a cat person, but a
Sure,
character
but
who's
a
breaking the fourth
character
wall.
who
Basically,
knows the script of the game you're playing.
basically a Deadpool, who just shows up,
Yeah,
looks
yeah,
right at
yeah.
the camera, and is like, yeah, I don't know about that idea. I bet he's going to get killed. And then the next scene, the guy gets killed, or something like that.
Right. Exactly. So like I don't know. It's Mike is a very unique character to the series. It's
I'm
I
glad he's
love
there. I'm I'm
I was about to
glad
say
he's
I
there.
love his existence. Just the fact that he's there with his weird little quips and his whole basis, and it's like, is he actually like this in-game divine being type of thing that we've gone over, or is it just like a goofy, like
Yeah.
in-game Easter egg that they're liking to carry on from game to game?
Right. So one of the things that's worth considering, and we've talked about this before, but it's always fun to recap this, is that in the lore of Elder Scrolls, there are Shezarenes or manifestations of Lorcan, or at least people who are considered to possibly be something like that. It is something that seems possible and like it might happen. And if that's the case, and Lorcan is now manifest into the world somehow, then he's not going to function like a regular person, which
Right.
means that he might be the player character, which is a very, there's some strong evidence that that might be the case every single time that you are a re-manifestation of Lorcan. He might be somebody like Talos who mantled him, or maybe even came into some of that power ahead of time somehow. But then another consideration would be, he's Mike walking around having some meta knowledge about this thing being a video game seems very much like it's knowledge that would be res like only reserved for a godlike being who can see beyond the bounds of the structure that they're in. So that could be part of it.
Love the character. Super. A big fan. I always hope that they keep one version of Maik just like floating around, even if it's just super quick reference. Just it's such a unique character of the series.
Yeah, and on top of it, he's the Maik, the son of Maik, the son of Maik, the son of like
Yes.
it seems like Maiks go all the way back. Like everything's turtles all the way down, everything's Maiks
Right.
all the way down.
Right.
So maybe that's the case, but big that's my eek. Yeah. All right. Number 32. And listen, I'm checking the time. We might have time for one or two more. Cameron's son could be a reference to many characters. This one, there's a lot of unsureness about when this was added to the iceberg. I don't know who added this to the iceberg, but we're not exactly sure here. Could be a reference to many characters, most likely King Cameron of Sentinel, who murdered his son because he was unfit to rule. It may also be referring to Mankar's own son, Raven, or Mankar Cameron, who is believed to be Haman Cameron's son. So there's a number of Camerons who also are fathers or sons, and some connection there. And there's a little bit of evidence for each of these. The King Cameron of Sentinel, I believe that goes back to the second Elder Scrolls 2.
Daggerfall.
Daggerfall. Yeah, I think that's a Daggerfall
thing. I was going to say, I think you're right. I think that goes to Daggerfall.
Yeah, so, but otherwise, there's, you know, intrigue in each of these options with a son who either came from a bad person or was murdered or something like this. It could mean any of those things. And there's a lot of those kinds of quests in the games where it's like, it seems like maybe this guy was guilty, but we don't really know. So,
yeah. And I mean, oftentimes it's very hard to have a ruling body that's completely considered not guilty of any type of
right.
atrocity or something.
Wait, are you telling me powerful people don't believe the rules apply to them, Lotus?
You know, I don't want to say something like that. I'll strongly imply it.
I don't know where you would get evidence for that ever at all. All right, number 33, Gothrid, that's a great name. Gothrid betrayed Lysandus. Lord Woodburn secretly murdered King Lysandus of Daggerfall. Gothrid, Lysandus' son, conspired with Woodborn on this. This is another one of those, like, I don't know, betrayal stories, I guess you could say. This also comes from, I keep wanting to say Daggerfall. Or no, I kept wanting to say Battlespire. Battlespire and Daggerfall always get mixed up in my head.
Sure. Well, I mean, Battlespire was originally intended to be an expansion to Daggerfall. So
yeah.
Cut yourself some slack.
Right. So this is a Daggerfall thing. It is
a Daggerfall thing.
Yeah. Anytime you have this whole like court intrigue stuff, that usually means it's Bretons or Imperials.
So this one's actually kind of wild that we bring this up, just because I got a bunch of the stuff edited. I try to do minimal editing for the YouTube versions of the live streams that I do of Daggerfall. So I was super behind, and I'm uploading like all the episodes that I have in the backlog, which I think is like 6 or 5 episodes or whatever. From when you're hearing this, you will most likely have the newest episode be this quest.
Nice.
It's literally the next episode that I'm putting on YouTube. So, if you are interested in this, you can check it out. We'll just say as of you hearing this, unless you're listening to us live, and then it'll be in like 3 days.
Yeah. Well, this one's not so much of a mystery. It feels pretty settled, but
it's not. It's pretty straightforward because you actually kind of play through the majority of this.
Yeah. So we'll go through it real quick.
You get the majority of proving that it's a thing in game, like
right. So this is there's a reason why this is like high up on the iceberg and it's not super deep. So the canon events of Daggerfall: the player discovers that Lord Woodburn, a high-ranking noble of Wayrest, is indeed orchestrated the assassination of King Lysandus. His motive is that Woodburn wanted to destabilize the region to expand Wayrest's power and eventually claim the throne for himself. This is how he does it. Lysandus was not killed on the battlefield by Cregane Field by an arrow, and was publicly reported, he was murdered by Woodborn's men under the cover of battle. So this is where it starts to get a little bit odd, right? The iceberg part of this theory is that the claim that Gothrid, Lysandus' son, was a co-conspirator. While the game presents Gothrid as a grieving son who eventually asks you to find his father's killer, several suspicious details support the idea that he knew or helped.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, there's the rapid succession. He was crowned King of Daggerfall almost immediately after his father's death, right after it was reported. He showed little hesitation and immediately pivoted the king's policies. So he started changing things right away as if he was prepared for it. I feel like there's something universal about just being a human being in the 21st century and struggling with weight. I know it's something that I've had to deal with, and I go in and out of exercising more and having a better diet, and then I ruin it by eating more pizza and tacos and whatever else. And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way. And diet and exercise are great, but sometimes you need a little bit more. You can lose 20% more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise with Wegovy at Hims. It regulates your appetite so you eat less, and Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles. You can get everything through Hims, so it all happens online. You'll be connected with a licensed provider who helps determine if this is the right treatment for you, and if you're prescribed, your medication is delivered directly to your front door. No insurance is necessary. There's a range of GLP-1 options, and they give you a lot of extra support with 24/7 messaging, team care, in-app lifestyle and nutrition support, recipes and meal plans. They're not just going to sell you the product. They're going to support you and make sure that you do what is right for you. So are you ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/scrollslore to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/scrollslore. hims.com/scrollslore. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit hims.com. And it seems like there might have been a cover-up. The official story was that Lysandus died heroically. If Gothrid's scouts or mages were competent, they would have seen that Lysandus was murdered behind the lines during the battle, not killed by the enemies of Sentinel. Gothrid benefited from the heroic death narrative because it gave him a casus belli to finish the war and consolidate power. So, briefly speaking, that means by putting the king out on the front lines and getting killed by the enemy, he had a reason to retaliate.
Right. It basically just gave him a free narrative of like, look, it's self-defense, essentially.
Right. Or our king.
For everybody that's angry. Like,
right. Right. So this was very politically convenient. Lysandus was obsessed with his mistress, Medora Direnne, and was arguably becoming an unstable ruler. For a young, ambitious prince like Gothrid, Woodborne's plot offered a clean way to remove a failing king and take the throne without a messy civil war. So you can see how the pieces kind of come together and they make it like, well, this seems like an opportunity, take advantage of this and
then gain
the power, right? And it seems to operate pretty smoothly as well. There's evidence in the Wayrest painting. In one of the game's quests, you must steal a painting from Castle Wayrest. This painting is essentially the smoking gun. It depicts Lord Woodborne and King Gothrid together looking quite friendly. The existence of the painting suggests a level of intimacy and alliance between the murderer and the grieving son that goes beyond standard diplomacy. Plus, there's a ghost. The most haunting evidence is the literal haunting of Daggerfall. Lysandus's ghost marches through the streets crying vengeance. If Lysandus only wanted Woodborne dead, the ghost might have been more specific. The fact that the ghost stayed tied to the city of Daggerfall, which happens to be Gothrid's seat of power, suggests that the betrayal was at home. Lysandus could not rest because his own blood had allowed his murder to walk free and profit from the crime. So there you go. Those are all the pieces. They seem to kind of fit really well together. So I don't know. I mean, this one feels like it's 99% sure.
Yeah, this one really just and the events of the game kind of really just lead you to this as well. It just seems like, this seems like this is most likely. It's another one where it's like this pretty much is just a thing you experience in game.
Yeah. So you go through all the steps, and as long as you're paying attention, reading the stuff, looking at the painting, doing all of that, you should be able to put it all together.
And to be fair, the painting is hyper pixelated, and it's given to you what's actually happening through like dialogue,
the text
that like, goes on your screen. Because I remember on stream when we were looking at the painting, I was like, "What the hell is that thing?"
right. Yeah. But like coming across the ghost too. Like there's enough pieces in here that even if you were half paying attention, you go, "Wait a minute!" Like you might go, "Wait, why is the ghost here, not somewhere else?"
Correct.
Yeah. So it all kind of comes together, but there you go. And this is part of these are like part of going through these again and digging into these is interesting because it shows how much, how interesting the writing was even in these earlier games.
Yeah, there was a lot of thought put into these quests. And it's really like a masterwork of a bunch of different people combining their ideas into a cohesive story, which makes it, which is what I always think makes this series feel as real as it does.
Yeah, that's well said. But that's going to do it for the iceberg stuff today. But don't go anywhere. We will be right back. And we got to thank our patrons and talk about some other stuff and the random UESP page. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, thank you to our patrons for keeping the show going, and welcome to Noob Man. That's a great name, Noob Man.
Excellent.
So glad that you're
Noobman.
here. Noobman, Noobman, Noobman. It's like Seinfeld all of a sudden. Some people will get that joke because we're old. But Noobman, thank you for signing up. Patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast if you want to help support the show and get a bunch of other cool stuff. Plus, you can join us for the patron chat. That's actually coming up. We're about halfway through the month and we've got 2 more weeks. So the 30th, we'll be doing our patron chat and you've got time to sign up and join us and help choose what we're going to talk about that
I was going
week.
to say,
All
we're
that
open to
stuff.
ideas for discussion as well.
Absolutely. And some of our patrons who get shout outs every week, who are also at a tier high enough to join us on the patron chat, are Kira C, Blinding Vision, Hircine, Peter R, Austin B, and Mintaka. Thank you for your continued support as well. If you want to help us out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it out on a future episode of the show. You can leave some kind comments on Spotify and drown out the people who post mean things for some reason. Every so often, sometimes people will post like mean things on multiple episodes. And this hasn't happened in a long time. And then I'll respond to them and be like, maybe this isn't the show for you. Like, I don't know. But yeah, you can leave us some kind comments. We always like to read those and it really does make our day. But we are down to the UESP page, the random page for this week. Before we get to that, Lotus, is there anything going on you want to share?
Not too much. I was going to say there's an episode of Tales that came out right alongside our episode of Lorecast last week. We got to dive into some more of the ESO stuff that's been all the news type of deal going on. And just like I said, if you're interested in some of this Daggerfall stuff we're talking about, I'm uploading all these extra episodes to try to catch up to where I would currently be the next time I play live on stream to my YouTube, which is just Lotus of Doom. They're very minimally edited. It's mostly just the live stream itself for all of the people who ask for it, they want to see it or whatever, understand how these old games work or how they play. It's really just kind of like my experience going through them from the way I would play them back then, which is no guides, no looking anything up, just fumbling through these games, which people have said, various things about. Yep, that takes a lot of patience because, man, some of those old games are pretty obscure.
That's how
But
you do it. That's the only way to do it.
it's a different type of fun.
Yeah. If you're gonna use a guide, you might as well just watch a video.
Right. And I was going to say, a lot of times I feel most people might just be content watching one episode just to understand how the game works, which is totally fine. It's just that's why it's thrown up there. But yeah, other than that, I just another reminder because it's getting shut down. If you haven't played Blades, go play the Elder Scrolls Blades on your phone. It's free. It's just
Yeah, you
it's
have
a
what, only a few
it's
weeks
really
left?
bumming me out that that
It's
game
pretty
is just
soon.
getting removed and it's being erased from the records.
Yeah.
I hate that crap. I hate it. We need better game preservation.
Hopefully that will be a thing. But yeah, go check out that stuff. Go check out Lotus's stuff. And also, if you want to check out my stuff, I do the Fallout Lorecast and the Lord of the Rings Lorecast and Retro Recall. We just talked about Myst last week. The title of the episode is Myst Sucks 4 times over. Just Myst sucks because I don't know if you've gone back and played Myst anytime recently.
My only experience playing Myst, if I remember correctly, was
Oh.
playing on my cousin's PlayStation 1.
Wow. That game
And
does not hold up over
I
time.
remember
It is.
being like,
Mm-mm.
know what's happening. I thought the
Yeah.
title was really cool, and then I was like, I'm really bored, and I stopped
Yes.
playing, and I think we played Doom instead.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah, John and I talk about it on this episode, and I only played it on like a friend's computer for a little bit. So I went back and tried to play it, and it is not worth it. Like, that game sold millions. It was like the best-selling game for a long time. And wholly on the fact that there were bored dads with PCs who wanted to see how good their graphics looked on their computer, I guess.
Sure.
That was basically it. But yeah, go listen to our breakdown of Myst, and we'll see if there's any redeeming qualities still in that game, because oof, it was rough. But that's Retro Recall. You can look that up or wherever you're listening to this. But Lotus, are you ready for the random page?
All right, let's. Is it Daggerfall related?
It's not Dagger. It's Elder Scrolls Online related.
All right, all right.
And technically, it's a people. That's the category.
Okay,
people.
It's a people. I like
it's
it.
A people.
Yep.
But it's not a person. It's just a people, sort of. You want to guess?
It's all of the Bretons. Every Breton.
They might be Breton. I can't tell because it's risen skeletons and they don't have any skin on them anymore. So
okay. Well, you know what? We're going to assume they're Breton skeletons.
Probably. I mean, Bretons can do creepy magic, so why not? But they're a weak skeleton summoned by Bleak Vale Aggrandizers in Baraha's Gloom. And they attack by striking you with their hands.
Great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, they've got 13,846 health.
It is funny the amount of health you have in the Elder Scrolls Online. Everybody does. The amount of
yes.
health and the amount of damage you do, because it's just scaled up in that game compared to some of the other games. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's funny just because number crunch in different games. It's you know, you get some JRPGs where it's like, I'm doing 13 damage, and then you've got other ones where it's like, I'm doing 3.7 billion.
Right. Elder Scrolls Online is kind of between those two, but
it's,
yeah 13,000 is still pretty big.
It's on the higher scale compared to, you know, Skyrim. It's like 13,000. It's like, I'm unstoppable at 600 health.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to guess what some of their skills and abilities are called? Remember, they just hit you with their hands. They don't really.
Smack.
Slash. That was close.
Okay.
Also, another one called Slash with another word before Slash.
Bone Slash.
Bone Slash. That was a good guess. Rending Slash.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. All right.
And then
oh,
if,
that's a, yeah.
if they hit you a lot real fast, what would you call that?
A Bone Storm. That's a Simpsons joke for
Ooh.
Nine people. It'll get that.
That's also close. Flurry is kind of
oh,
like
all
a
right.
storm. And then they have a way that they jump. I don't know why we're doing this. This is funny.
I don't either.
Devastating Leap and Desecrated Ground. Those are their abilities.
Okay.
So there you go. Yep. Go
the
look
best
up
way
some,
to kill them is to give them bonitis.
Yeah. Go say hi to the risen bonitis, risen skeletons and Baraha's Gloom. But that's going to do it for this week. Chat, thank you for joining us. So glad to see all of you on here and chiming away with your comments. I can't respond to all of them, but I do love them. And that's going to do it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll be back next week, probably with some more Iceberg stuff before hanging out with our patrons. And until then, stay safe out there. And I don't know if somebody's doing some nefarious thing secretly in order to gain power, which is like so many of the things that came up in today's episode.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, there's a
Beware.
Theme going on this episode.
Definitely a theme. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Have a great one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.